Like, there's just that concept, being one of many in the body of Christ. You're participating in the community and everyone gets to be lifted up. And I love that. And I do think there's a contemplative part to that because it is a self-emptying. And I think that does happen a lot in meditation when we let go of our ego to make space for the Holy Spirit.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. Thanks for joining me today on In Good Faith. This is the second in our episodes about contemplative worship, and I'm so excited to bring our guest today to you, Reverend Daniela Lee, to talk about not just meditation or being still, but how that combines with worship. We spoke last week with members of the Society of Friends, better known as Quakers, from a meeting in Maryland. Coming up, we have both a chaplain and an atheist who I met at a silent retreat at an abbey talking about what that does for them in their very different circumstances. Upcoming episode, we will actually speak with three of the monks and one of the priests at Holy Cross Abbey near Berryville, Virginia, about their lives. And then we'll wrap all of this up with a book club discussion with our first guest ever, Julie Borio-Goetz, from episode one, where we'll focus on Henry Nouwen's very practical spiritual direction. So great stuff to come. Reverend Danny was really great because she's actually been thinking about this a lot lately. I'm in studio with our senior producer, Heather Bigley.
Hello.
And also Aaliyah Ebert.
Hey, everyone.
Reverend Danny, Heather, has been thinking about this for a while.
Yes. She, in fact, is teaching a course right now with her congregants about contemplative practice and has an upcoming silent retreat. And if you don't remember, she's the priest in charge at St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Provo, Utah, originally from Romania. She has two children and is just a cheerful, lovely, generous person. We're so glad to have her in studio with us.
You can hear her story and her faith journey from Romania to here in episode 161 of In Good Faith. And I would be listening for things you've heard of but don't understand, and she's going to explain. At least that's how it turned out for me. I won't say any more till the end about that.
I would also definitely listen for her discussion of the labyrinth and the different metaphors that come with it.
I started off by asking Reverend Danny what she feels is important about contemplative practice.
I myself am not a contemplative, but I do recognize that even for people who don't want to practice it as a lifestyle, even just doing it here and there, it is still meaningful and it can bring a lot of grounding to your person, right? Especially in times of instability, in times of distress or crisis, just taking a step back, being silent, listening for the voice of God within you, those are beautiful practices that can bring a lot of positive into your life.
In the Christian tradition, this idea or a tradition of contemplative prayer. Now, there are people who lived out in monasteries in deserts to totally separate themselves from civilization, any worldly distraction. But I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No. My first encounter with contemplative practices has been with the Taizé community from France. I've not been there, but my best friend went there when we were in high school, and she came back with all these stories. And I thought, well, that sounds quite wonderful. So what they came up with is chanting repetitive pieces of music in a way that brings meditation, right? So you just have one phrase, or maybe two phrases, that you keep chanting over and over again. We call them Taizé hymns, because that's where they come from, and they're simple. And so we try to incorporate some of that into our Sunday worship. So in the Episcopal Church, depending on how many people come to receive the Eucharist, that can take between 5 or 15 minutes, right? Depending how long it takes. So in those moments where people are just coming towards the altar to receive communion, we've started doing that because you might be walking towards the altar while you're singing. You take a break, you walk back, you can catch right back in, like you don't have to remember that much of it. And I think part of the beauty of contemplation is that you don't have to think about the next steps. You can just be in the now. And if there's not a lot that you have to remember when you're chanting, you can be in that now. So that's part of what I like about the Teize chants. Now, of course, there's other practices as well. Another practice that is very fascinating that I've encountered quite a bit of time ago and I've been practicing quite a bit is Lectio Divina. And it's reading the scriptures through a more meditative lens, and you move through four steps as you're reading it. Like, you have to read it out loud four times, and each time you have to put a different lens on it and listen to the voice of God within you. And that's a very grounding technique, I found.
Can you think of a type of thing or something you learned during that process by thinking of that same passage different ways?
There's a movement to it. The first time is called lectio. It's when you read the passage and you read it out loud. And then you let a word or a phrase rise up from within the text towards you. And then the second time you read it out loud, the second motion is oratio, which is prayer. And the second time, you take that word or phrase and you think, like, what prayer can I give God with this word or phrase? And then the third one, meditatio, is when you listen for the voice of God and you say, with this phrase or word, what is God trying to tell me? And you listen for that part. And then the fourth one is called contemplatio, contemplation, which is when you let go of anything. Father Tyler Doherty from St. Mark's Cathedral in Salt Lake City, he said this beautiful thing during this last movement. He said that imagine that your thoughts are like a river and you're sitting beside it, and a thought might rise up a little bit like a wave, and you can just look at it rising up and let it go. You don't have to hold on to it. So you're just sort of like existing with the flow of your mind without trying to hold on to anything. And it brings a very peaceful state.
You know, you're reminding me of Old Testament and be still and know that I am God. That is really interesting, to quiet yourself, to still yourself. How do you combine that? I can see doing that to let go of worrying about what's coming up tomorrow or what I just said yesterday that I think, oh, maybe I need to apologize or whatever that might be. So it's nice to be in the present, that kind of being still. It's the "and know that I am God" part. I'm interested in ways that you worship in contemplation or meditation. How do those combine?
Yeah, so one of the ways that I like to meditate, I sit somewhere that is not too comfortable, but not too uncomfortable. I don't want to fall asleep, but I also don't want to be distracted. I kind of take stock of my body so that I acknowledge if something is a distraction, like there's a pain somewhere or an itch or something. And I just acknowledge that it's there so that it no longer is a distraction. And then I try to just go within myself. And by that, I mean, it's a spot that I don't think I've ever seen in real life, but it exists within me. And maybe for each person it is different, but it might be a place that you have been to, or it might be non-existent in reality. Who knows, right? But for me, it is a spot that has some trees and it has a creek, and it's a very natural place. There's nothing man-made in it. And I project myself to that place. I close my eyes and I project myself to that place and I just sit. And it's not always, but sometimes God shows up. And it might be in the rustling of a wind. It might be in an impression. And sometimes it is in the person of Christ that I can see, like a physical body, but I can't distinguish any clear features, but I know somehow that that is Christ. And that's how I encounter God.
That's very beautiful.
There's just this deep sense of connection and belovedness that I've not experienced.
That's a great word.
Yeah, I've not experienced in any other context.
Henry Nouwen and Thomas Merton talk about being the beloved. And that I think that resulted from their practices, their contemplative practices. I know that you like being out in the landscape.
Yes, I do.
You take your husband and your kids, you like to be out. Is there a spiritual aspect to that, or are you just glad to leave your worries behind? Two legitimate things.
It's hard, and that's why I like it. I'm not a good hiker, so it's hard, especially going up. I'm not athletic at all. So that's part of the appeal. Doing something that's difficult is part of the appeal for me, of being out in nature. I spent a whole week up at Camp Tuttle with my kids last week, and they were busy with activities. But one thing that I did, and it's for the first time that I've actually done it, because I'm not a person that can sit still. I'm very active and I like to be involved in many things. But being there at Camp Tuttle, I found myself with a lot of time that didn't have to be accounted for. So I just sat in the outdoor chapel for 2 hours and I tried to move as little as I could. And something extraordinary happened, which is that the animals around, like the chipmunks and the squirrels, stopped perceiving me as a person. And I could just sit still and witness that. And that also gave me this sense of connection that I hadn't felt before with nature, because I always feel separate from nature. Mm-hmm. Part of it because a lot of it is terrifying, right?
It might eat you or fall on you.
Yes, exactly. But in that moment, it wasn't. It was just me and the chipmunk and the squirrel that were just sharing a space. And that was beautiful in itself, right? And that felt like such a privilege to be able to take that time and rejoice in the beauty that God created here for us, that God gave us to enjoy and to be part of and to connect to. And it gave me this renewed sense that I do need to be out more in nature and have those moments of connection. To me, connecting with other people and connecting with nature are different ways of also connecting with God. There's a spark of God within each person, but there's also a spark of God around us in creation. And the more we enjoy it and the more we show gratitude for it, I think the better we can care for the people around us and for the nature around us.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. Nothing captivates me more than people setting out on an adventure, especially if it's a place I wish I could go to or a subject I wish I knew more about, but I don't live in the right place or I don't have the equipment or the expertise. I'm telling you about a podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts, an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. With host Marcus Smith, you'll be expanding your horizons on all kinds of discovery. It could be science, it could be art, history, and more. Do you need that feeling of awe and wonder in your life more? I do, and I love it when I see how to experience that by hearing the stories of people who are doing and exploring all of those things that are so interesting to me. Check out the podcast, Constant Wonder. Welcome back to In Good Faith. Right now we're talking with Reverend Daniela Lee from St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Provo about contemplative practices in worship. What do you want to say about contemplative practice that I haven't asked?
I think my advice would be just try them out and see if one fits. It might be that none of them fit, although I've never met a person for whom none of them fit, right? But some might fit better than others. Like there's different ones that are more dear to my heart and that help me get into that space of God's presence a lot easier than others. I do have a lot of people who had never practiced anything contemplative in their lives, and then they start doing it, either because they were introduced somewhere else or they started coming to our contemplative practice night. And from our conversations, I think they find a lot of meaning within it. Like it enriches their lives and it brings more peace and grounding. They become more grounded. And that's, to me, that's always a positive.
Years ago, I went with our senior producer, Heather Bigley. We were at Father Richard Rohr's Center for Action and Contemplation. And they did have a labyrinth outside, sort of outlined in the dirt with stones. And this is one that I don't understand yet.
I have one at St. Mary's.
A labyrinth?
It's painted on the concrete in our back, yes.
Nice. Well, have to take a look. Talk to me about, is there a way you prepare yourself or that you're thinking of as you go
through? you prepare yourself to enter the labyrinth, and it's not a maze. Mm-hmm. It's a labyrinth. So you can take no wrong turns.
Okay.
And that's important, that however you go towards God. Mm. And then you walk it, and all of them kind of make you go close to the center, and then you go far from the center, and then you get close to the center, and then you go far from the center again. And that helps it symbolize how sometimes you might not feel close to God, mm-hmm. but you're still close to God.
You're
even
on that
though
path.
You might not feel it, because you are walking the labyrinth, you are walking towards the center. You know rationally that you should be close, but you might feel so far away. Mm. And that's just an illusion, right? Like our senses might just be an illusion. God is already there. And then you get to the center, and then you sit there in the center listening for that voice of God. And then as you walk back to exit the labyrinth, you meditate on how you're going to take that experience and apply it into your life outside of the labyrinth. Mm. And there are a variety of practices that you do by repetitive motion, like praying the prayer beads. That's a repetitive motion with a somewhat repetitive prayer.
True.
Yeah. I've also read about people practicing contemplative gardening.
So is it just bringing awareness to something that you're doing?
My hunch is that it's engaging your body in a way that it's no longer a distraction for your mind, so your mind can do the things that it needs to do in that moment.
But you're reminding me for decades that I worked as a songwriter, like the collection phase where you're just taking a bag and you're throwing in things that might be useful. And then there's sort of this sifting process. Mm-hmm. And then there's the leave it to your unconscious to do. And I have learned to even challenge my unconscious, like, huh, I bet you can't figure out how to tie those three things together. And then your mind suddenly does. You're doing something else. And for me, a repetitive action, I think I discovered, was a kind of meditation I didn't know I was doing.
Yes.
It's like as simple as going for a walk, mm-hmm. if you can be mindful of that. Or that you're in this process where part of your mind is free because you don't really have to concentrate a lot on mm-hmm. dishwashing. And I've had some of my best creative insights, or suddenly knowing how a project should be shaped while doing something, I would say a mindless activity.
Yes.
But I think I was being very mindful. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I just didn't know it.
That was very healing for me as a new mom. I was a stay-at-home mom for quite a few years. My husband was working many hours to be able to support us, and I felt that I had no downtime to do anything. Mm. I was also going to seminary, so when it wasn't children, it was schoolwork and all of that. So I just felt like I had absolutely no spiritual practice. For a lot of time, I felt like there's just no way for me to cram prayer time in this day. There's no way for me to have 15 minutes of quiet time because both my kids stopped napping at the age of 2. There was just no silence. And then in the evening, I was so tired that I would fall asleep before my kids did, you know. And I felt so inadequate as a religious person because I felt like there's no time for this. And then I read an article, and I don't remember who the author was. She was a Jewish rabbi, and she talked about how every time you make a meal for your children, you are doing an act of service to God. Every time you wash dishes, you are doing an act of service. So that really, I felt that message spiritually saved me. Because for many years, I had no time to integrate these traditional modes of worship and prayer in my own home life, but I could do these other things. Tending to a garden that is then going to feed my children mm-hmm. with these fresh vegetables that they're going to enjoy, that was a mode of prayer and service. So, you know, at different times in our lives, we might be able to do different things. Just because something fits now doesn't mean it will fit forever. And we always need to be open to different modes of connecting with God, because God will always find a way to connect with us within the circumstances of our lives.
And that's beautiful, that the things that really you had to do could become your spiritual practice. Yeah. I read recently, and a contemplative boredom, I'm going to call this, which is like, will send people running for the hills. Because we can't stand to be bored. But I was hearing recently that the moment we're bored is when our mind starts to kick into something very creative.
Yeah.
And that avoiding that is actually avoiding us discovering part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a better word than boredom, because that sounds really terrifying to a lot of us. Have you found that you are more comfortable being you and just being with yourself, having practiced these practices than before?
Very much so, yes, very much so. And it's connected to that sense of belovedness that I feel when I connect with God.
Mm.
I love what you're saying about the boredom, because, you know, my commute is long. And I've started doing that in silence, no music, no podcast. And, you know, it's been wonderful because I get to work. I feel a lot more prepared for the day because I wasn't distracting myself from the driving. And I also pay better attention to the road, you know. And the silence is quite wonderful because it helps us to recharge.
Yeah. So the word solitude, this is another thing I wanted to ask you about. There is solitude, but then we come together as a faith community.
Mm-hmm.
In prayer, we can even come in silent prayer. What do we gain from worshiping together? You could say, I can pray at home. Why do I go with my faith community to pray or have a service or do communion? What is gained by that joining together, even in quiet worship?
I think the question is, what is gained by not being together, right? Like, God created us as multiple, not as solitary.
Mm.
And Jesus gathered us as a community.
Yeah.
And his, you know, his last commandment to us was, love one another as I have loved you. So I think we can only exist as community. We can take some time for solitude, but we can only exist as community. I think the idea of individualism is at play here that is so widespread in Western culture, right? Like, it's individualism is so ingrained within us. But I don't think it's a Christian value. In any way, I think being communal is a Christian value. So what we have to unlearn is individualism, not communitarianism. We need to stop uplifting individualism and the self-made man and the myth of the self-made man and all of that, and acknowledge that we can only exist as community, and we can only exist by the help of others.
Yeah, I'm thinking of New Testament communities that would meet together in a home,
mm-hmm.
and they were having all things in common.
Yes.
That's a big stretch for us.
Yeah.
And in, I don't know of a church community that gets together and doesn't sing.
Yes.
And the thing I like about my church choir is we're all singing the same song, but there are different parts for each of us to sort of fit, because our voices are all different, higher or lower or all of that. And every once in a while, as we're singing something that, you know, the sopranos are off on the melody and that's kind of cool. And I think, yeah, but I'm part of this. I'm here, you know, singing the bass note that they're building on top of. So to me, I think I've realized that there is something contemplative about unifying our voices, even that physically we are standing there making sounds that match and that have meaning because of the words.
Yeah. And even the fact that, you know, you might not be carrying the soprano song, right? Mm-hmm. But you are aiding. There's a self-emptying there, right? Like, it's not, one of the things that I love about choirs is that it's not like this ego thing. Right? You don't go there to shine. You're one of many. And I love that. Like, just that concept, you know, being one of many in the body of Christ. That's one of my favorite things, because there's a self-emptying, right? You're not lifting your person or you as an individual. You're not lifted up. You are lifting up the whole community. You're participating in a community, and everyone gets to be lifted up. And I love that. And I do think there's a contemplative part to that, because it is a self-emptying. And I think that does happen a lot in meditation.
Yeah.
When we let go of our ego to make space for the Holy Spirit.
You just heard Steve speaking with Reverend Danny Lee about silent worship in community. I really loved her insight with parenthood. She talked about her experience as a mother and how she didn't feel like she had time for this kind of silent spiritual worship. But she had this great insight that God will connect with us through the circumstances of our lives. And so in that circumstance of her life, serving her children was the way that she was serving God and connecting with him.
Yeah, just feeding them as an act of worship, mm-hmm. an act of service. So I think this is hugely encouraging to people who have a lot of responsibilities, who are taking care of people. It's like, that's good stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
You're not being a slacker. You need to sleep.
Right.
You have no time for some of these things, at least at this point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me some insight. It's really easy to sort of say, oh, a labyrinth. Wasn't there a minotaur in there somewhere?
P.S. I said to my husband, hey, do you know what the difference is between a labyrinth and a maze? Because I just had an interview about that. And he said, one of them has David Bowie in it. And I was like,
correct.
Well done. Well done.
Well done. So that was insightful just in itself. That a labyrinth, at least in the contemplative way we're talking about, you're not going to get lost. But what I did love was this insight about it's all bringing you along a path to God. And that even when you feel like you've taken a turn now and you're heading away from center, you're still heading towards God and you're not that far away.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of touched by that metaphor that I'm on a path that even when I feel like, oh, I maybe took a little turn away, I might not be that far from God. In fact, God might be walking right with me.
I especially appreciated her discussion of worshiping in community and how that led you both to talk about your experience with choirs.
And I
have to say, one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had on a consistent basis was singing in the Gainesville Fifth Ward Choir in Florida. And the choir was mostly made up of leadership from the church. We had this leadership meeting, and then the bishop would walk us over to the chapel where he made us all attend choir practice.
He made you all volunteer to attend.
Yes, we were voluntold about choir practice. And when I talked to the other members of the choir, many of them said, my Sunday is full of me making sure things are running correctly mm-hmm. and keeping, like, say, 26 children in line or whatever it is we need to do so that I get to come here and sing with you all is the sacred part of my Sunday.
I love that.
I've spent a lot of times as part of different musical ensembles, and there's definitely something different. There's a synergy when you combine yeah. people and create something bigger than yourselves.
So my huge big takeaway is meditation is good and can be helpful. I can use that also as part of worship, and in fact, pull it into my practice and become closer to God. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of our mini-series about meditation and contemplative silence, all in the service of worship. So grateful to Reverend Danny Lee for speaking with us. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Cap Perry, and Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Leah King, Katarina Martinich, Josh Orton, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, and Lauren Sandberg. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure you leave a comment or review wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, that helps spread the word. And find us on Twitter at InGoodFaithPod, on Instagram and Facebook at InGoodFaithPodcast. Our YouTube address is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.